I do also want to just acknowledge my collaborators on this project, Pamela Valera, who has been integral in this project, and also Miguel Munoz-Boy. I also, like the other presenters, have nothing to disclose. So I wanted to start with some of the key points, take-home messages of this presentation. And the first is that pastors and parishioners in Black churches do not always conceive of homosexuality as a sinful lifestyle choice, and that affiliates of Black churches, at least in the study that we are, or that I'll be presenting today, describe categories of homosexuality in three ways: behavioral homosexuality, acquired homosexuality, and constitutional homosexuality, and I'll describe those in a minute. Finally, and also very important to this presentation, is that the different ways that Black churches conceptualize homosexuality can serve to either facilitate or impede mobilization around HIV prevention for Black men who have sex with men, or MSM. So I wanted to begin, I like my diagrams. Anyone who knows me, and when I present, I like to highlight what's going on in terms of the domestic epidemic in HIV. And I know that many of you in this audience know that HIV is still a tremendous problem among ethnic minority populations in the United States. But this article, which came out, and I believe this is New England Journal of Medicine by Wafa El-Sadr, highlights what's actually going on in the U.S. among particular populations relative to what's happening in sub-Saharan Africa. And so if you look at the blue bar furthest to the right, you can see in New York City, among men who have sex with men, prevalence of HIV is greater than that of Kenya and rivaling that of South Africa. So there's still a huge problem here. The map to the right also shows prevalence within neighborhoods in New York City, and you can see in some communities, and notably those that are a deeper color of red, you almost have a generalized epidemic when it comes to HIV. Also, it's important to note that just recently, just about a month ago, the CDC came out with a 21-city study of men who have sex with men and found that more than 1 in 4 Black MSM were HIV positive based on the data that was collected. So it's a serious problem here in the United States. It's not also, my talk is of course focusing on churches and Black churches specifically, and it's important to highlight that there's significance in talking about this topic due to what's happened recently and historically in the media surrounding Black churches. So I think many of us have heard about Eddie Long, the pastor of a large church in Atlanta who was accused of engaging in sexual relationships with young men who were in his congregation. But also, we still see lots of picketing and protest around gay marriage. We see lots of protest around gays and lesbians within the church and in the broader Black community. So I am talking about the Black church in this presentation, and while that in itself is a presentation, I did want to highlight what I mean when I say the Black church. There is this institution that we can call the Black church because so many Black Americans do affiliate in some way with a religious institution. So the Pew Center highlighted that 90% of Blacks report a formal religious affiliation, and even among those who are not affiliated, 75% say religion is important, and that's more than any other ethnic group in the United States. It's also important to highlight the role that the Black church has played in the lives of many Americans, Black Americans particularly. And James Cone wrote extensively on the Black church and Black liberation theology, writing that the Black church was born out of protest. So the Black church has been embedded in civil rights movement, in the civil rights movement and other social movements within the US. And we've also seen many of the leaders within the community emerge out of the church. So it is a very powerful force within communities, and it's an institution that influences attitudes and social norms within Black communities. Several scholars, some of whom are in this room, have begun to explore the role of the Black church in shaping vulnerability to HIV among Black men who have sex with men. And what you see, one of the findings that comes out of this literature is that the black church plays a somewhat paradoxical role in the lives of black gay men or black men who have sex with men. While it provides these men with a sense of community and also social support and many times coping resources, it also can promote internalized homophobia and sexual prejudice or homophobia. And to think about this in terms of minority stress theory, we know that stigma toward black MSM and stigma that's coming out of an institution like the black church specifically can really contribute to negative mental and physical health outcomes and risk behavior. And so with that in mind, this study aimed to identify how parishioners and pastors in black churches in New York City conceptualize homosexuality. And the broader goal was actually to examine these churches with the aim of better understanding their roles in responding to the epidemic among black men who have sex with men. And this was one of the key findings that emerged as we did our analysis. So we conducted data collection in three ways that were connected. We did ethnographic observations of church services. We conducted focus group interviews with religious parishioners. And finally, we did one-on-one interviews with religious leaders. And the data were collected in communities in which black people live and work in fellowship. And those included Central Harlem and Washington Heights, the South Bronx, and Brooklyn. So this table highlights our different churches. The black church is not one denomination. Black people go to many different types of churches, so we went to those churches. And they included Catholic, AME, Baptist, Presbyterian, and interdenominational or non-denominational churches. We did 10 interviews with pastors or religious leaders and did 10 focus groups with parishioners. And those focus groups contained about or had about 5 to 6 parishioners in each. Some of them had a few more. Both the interviews and focus groups covered three topics primarily, though we, of course, they were open-ended, so covered a great deal more. But we were interested in understanding the organizational structure of the church, religious beliefs and values, which is what I'm really focusing on today, and also external connections or ways of connecting to other organizations and community groups. And we engaged in grounded theory to analyze these data. And that is a multi-stage process that includes memoing, creating a code book, systematic coding, and then we used in vivo to facilitate organizing the data and identifying themes. So as I mentioned when I began, there were basically three distinct categories of homosexuality that we saw or found in the work that we did for this project. And they varied really along two axes. One was choice and the other mutability. So behavioral homosexuality was largely described as something that was chosen and mutable. And so you can see in this diagram below that behavioral homosexuality, which is orange, is on the northern part of the mutability axis, which north would mean more likely to, or more ability to change, whereas south would be less likely or lower ability to change. And it's also to the east for the choice axis, which would be east being more choice, west being not a choice. So the folks that we spoke to also talked about acquired homosexuality, which was homosexuality which was not chosen and largely mutable or changeable. And that, of course, is in the blue box in the diagram. And finally, constitutional homosexuality, which was homosexuality that was not a choice and that was considered to be not able to be changed or immutable. So just to give you some of the words of the parishioners and pastors who we spoke to, and I'll hopefully also help you see how they specifically detailed these three categories. This is a male elder at an AME church, and he noted, I taught HIV and AIDS at a school in the Bronx, and the first part of the curriculum that I actually helped write was about diversity of families. You know, families with two mothers and two fathers. And I had one of the parents stand up and say, listen, let me just tell you, you know, I don't want you to teach my son how to be a homosexual. So where I had to tell him, listen, I'm not teaching your son homosexuality. I'm teaching him the reality of the society that we live in. You know, his sexuality will be taught to him more by you and your church than his own feelings. But I was going to ask you, the interviewer says, what do you think, or do you think it's taught? Or he says, I think there are two types of homosexualities. I think there are people who are homosexual by preference, and I think there are people who are homosexual by socialization. And he continued in this interview to talk in detail about socialization and how it did impact people's sexual behaviors and their sexual preference, even noting that he thought heterosexuality was a result of socialization, but just a more popular socialization than, say, what we would find for homosexuality. And this was another interesting interview with a Catholic priest in the Bronx, and he noted, when being asked, what are the church's teachings on homosexuality? Okay, again, the church's teaching on homosexuality is that this is difficult. The relationship, a sexual relationship, is between a man and a woman. Now, there are three levels of homosexuality, and two of them are easy to deal with. The first level is basically a situational homosexuality, where a person is in prison or wherever. That's not real homosexuality. The second level is arrested sexual development, where maybe because of some experience, the person believes that they're homosexual. The third is one that causes me difficulty. It's what's considered constitutional homosexuality. This is who the person is. So the person is, it's not a psychological thing. There wasn't a trauma. There's not that. It's not a passing thing. It's who they constitutionally are. I think the whole fact that we don't understand how someone is constitutionally homosexual raises up all kinds of issues. We understand the other two. We don't understand this one. So the church's teaching would be that, the official church teaching would be that constitutional homosexuals would not be able to have a sexual relationships. I would probably be less restrictive on that. You sell that tape and I'm dead. And as humorous as it is, and it is humorous, it also highlights the discomfort that a lot of the leadership in the church had around these issues and their inability to sometimes act on them, although this priest, of course, was. Another pastor at a Baptist church said, our church has a very nuanced stance on the subject of homosexuality. In terms of causality, I think that there are kind of three. One, I think there are people who are born with a genetic predisposition. I'm not suggesting you can. There are geneticists who are trying to isolate the homosexual gene. I don't know whether or not it'll ever be found, but I do believe that there are people who are born with a predisposition towards it. Secondly, I believe there are persons who are initiated into the gay lifestyle through traumatic events. Then thirdly, I believe that there are some people who it is a matter of experimentation and choice. So I'm not suggesting that it's hard and fast for everyone, and I know there are people who've fallen in what I believe all three categories I've named. Now, having said that, the question becomes ultimately, for me, a matter of whether you're straight or gay, do we allow our sexuality to dominate our choices? And so there's a little bit of, this person is, of course, talking about three different categories, but at the end, still insinuating that there are choices that people can make regarding their sexuality. So there is a very nuanced understanding of homosexuality for this pastor and others that we interviewed. You can see that pretty much all of the different denominations that we spoke to had some kind of understanding of different dimensions of homosexuality. So while Baptist churches were the most frequently talked about different dimensions, the other denominations also did as well. I know I'm running low on time, but I do want to also share with you some of the specific quotes that pastors and parishioners had to say about choice and mutability. So one pastor at a Baptist church said, and I've learned to stand up for them and use their faith to defend them to a degree, not their lifestyle, but to defend the person and their choice. Another priest at a Catholic church had something more different to say or had an alternative view. They say that homosexual relations between two people are not what sexuality is meant to be and therefore not to be desired. I have a nephew who's gay and I love him greatly. I'm never going to condemn him or criticize him. And I don't think he really chooses to be this, but I just leave him up to God. And finally, a couple of parishioners at a Baptist church talk about Christianity as concerned in a believer, the only thing that I can say about homosexuality is sin is a sin. I'll let you read the rest of the quote, but it does end with saying, but we don't sit in judgment on anyone in their choice, their lifestyle choice. So again, there's a lot of articulating choice and what people can or can't do and what they can or cannot act upon. There was also a lot of talk about, around change and transformation and mutability. And one parishioner at a non-denominational church noted, one of the biggest themes at our church here is transformation and change. That's all he says. Even when he's doing altar call, you can come as you are, but you can't stay as you are. So we welcome people who may be living that homosexual lifestyle, but when you get here, we try to empower them with the word of God so they can change their lifestyles. An elder at an AME church noted, I am decidedly and intentionally heterosexual. So again, insinuating that he is deciding, as anyone could, to be a certain sexual preference. And finally, a male at a Baptist church noted, if you've been saved and you've accepted Christ and you study his word, you come in like a baby, and babies grow and they mature and they change in that. So I believe in change. I believe that God changes things in people because he wants us to serve him in a certain way. She's open and honest about her homosexuality, and that's what allows the change to come about in her, because she's open about it, she knows it, and she's dealing with it. And he's referring to a female parishioner who was in this group who was openly gay as a lesbian and really struggling through this interview or through this focus group with her sexuality and trying to reconcile her faith with her sexuality. But you see, her and many other of her congregants noted that her openness was fine, but that all allowed the door to be open for her to change herself. So in conclusion, our understandings of homosexuality among the affiliates of churches that we went to were much more varied than we anticipated. Some pastors and parishioners expressed their belief that homosexuality wasn't just a sinful behavior or a choice. However, the origins of these understandings and the extent to which they were openly discussed is not very clear. And we know that from some of our data that they weren't necessarily openly discussed that often, because there still was some apprehension and fear around talking about particularly constitutional homosexuality. Churches that hold a belief that homosexuality is not a choice and is immutable may have more positive attitudes toward black men who have sex with men and gay and lesbian people in general, and therefore there may be less stigma or homophobia directed toward gays and lesbians. But the idea that black men who have sex with men can change their sexual identities or behaviors can create a hostile environment, a church community that is hostile to these men. And that environment will thwart community building, and mobilization can possibly increase their vulnerability to HIV and other poor health outcomes. So, thank you very much.